This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, conservatives in the House Freedom Caucus are calling on House leadership to exercise Congress's authority and overturn an ill-conceived assisted suicide ordinance here in our nation's capital. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan has the latest on D.C.'s death with dignity law, as well as a report on the Freedom Caucus's meeting with Vice President Mike Pence last night. Also, President Trump's national security advisor, retired General Michael Flynn, resigned last night amidst a scandal surrounding his communications with Russia. Claire Lopez with the Center for Security Policy is here on that story. And U.S. officials confirmed Russia has deployed cruise missiles inside their country in violation of a U.S.-Russian treaty. Additionally, Iran and North Korea have recently launched missiles in apparent acts of provocation. Is this a testing of the Trump administration? Our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is here with that answer. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, so much going on here in Washington today. News beyond the General Flynn debacle. We'll talk about that. But the clock is about to run out on Congress's ability to overturn a D.C. law that will usher in assisted suicide here in our nation's capital. And the Freedom Caucus is pushing House leadership to act before it's too late. The Freedom Caucus's founding chairman, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan of the 4th District, can explain this as well as give us some insight into the Freedom Caucus's meeting last night with Vice President Mike Pence. Congressman Jordan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
With you. Yeah, it was great to have the Vice President last night at our meeting, and Chairman Meadows had invited him, and Vice President stopped by and did an outstanding job like he always does, presenting the important things we've got to get done for the families across this great country. So it was great to see him.
I understand there was some discussion about the repeal of Obamacare.
Yeah, you know our position. We have said let's do this as quickly as we possibly can. We said at a minimum let's do what we did in 2015. We should at least be able to put on President Trump's desk the same bill we put on President Obama's desk. And right now we're a little concerned about that because, frankly, Tony, we've heard so much talk about, you know, the Cassidy Collins plan, which is basically if you like your Obamacare, you get to keep it. We've heard talk about not including the defund Planned Parenthood language in there. We've heard talk about keeping some of the taxes. We've heard talk about repairing it as if there's something worth fixing in this law. So in that context, we said, look, let's take the position that at a minimum, let's just send over what we sent over before, the bill we all voted on and put on the President Obama's desk. Let's do that as the repeal, and then a separate bill would have what we think are free market and pro-family replacement policies in it, and do that in a separate piece of legislation.
And that makes perfect sense because Congress has already passed that, as you pointed out. It went to the President's desk, then President Obama. He vetoed it. There's no excuse for those who are currently in Congress who voted for that last time not to vote for it this time.
No, I'm exactly right. Let's do it, and let's get after it here. We told the voters this. It's been a huge issue in the last several election cycles, and I always remind people, never forget everything we were told about Obamacare turned out to be false. I mean, Jonathan Gruber admitted that, you know, like your plan, keep your plan, like your doctor, keep your doctor, premiums will decline, they'll decline $2,500, deductibles will go down, website will work, website's secure, emergency room visits will decline, they've actually increased. And they also told us, oh, we're gonna have these 23 co-ops, they're going to be wonderful, 18 of those have already went bankrupt. So
right.
Everything we were told about this turned out to be
false. And they also called it the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been anything but with the rising cost of premiums and, of course, the high deductibles families now have to pay. Let's repeal it. Let's do it as quickly as we can, and let's do the same thing we did before so there's no excuse not to vote for it.
Well, and just a little bit of review here. The talk after the election was that this was going to be waiting for President Trump when he took office.
We promised him much. You're exactly right, Tony. We promised a much faster time frame than what we're doing now. So, all the more reason for us to move, and why not move on something that's already passed both bodies.
So what was the sense from Vice President Pence? Is that something that's acceptable?
We didn't get into specifics there. We took a position on this after the Vice President left. We talked in the Vice President talked about some general concerns and issues that they want to address in the coming weeks and months, and we just had a nice visit. And then he had, you know, he's a busy man. He had to get back to, I think, a meeting at the White House.
I understand he had dinner with you, though, right?
Sure did. Yeah, he was there for maybe I'm guessing 30, 40 minutes.
So what did you all have for dinner?
What was it, Panera? We you know, nothing nothing fancy.
Dining higher on the hog there, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's better than pizza some nights. We have pizza some nights, too.
Well, that's because the pizza joint went out of business. That's right. Hey,
yeah,
all right, Congressman Jordan, let's talk about, in all seriousness, let's talk about another measure that, and let me set the stage for this. The District of Columbia has home rule charter, but Congress has the ability to basically veto ordinances that the district adopts. Mm-hmm. And so there is a oversight in Congress. You sit on that committee. Mm-hmm. In December, the District of Columbia pushing Death with Dignity, an assisted suicide bill. The clock is ticking. You only have so much time to overturn those policies.
Yep.
And last night, the committee voted to overturn it, but the clock may still run out before House leadership acts.
Right. The clock runs out on this Friday, so we have to act by this Friday. Leadership is just not going to bring it to the floor, which is just wrong. It's just disappointing. This bill, you know, just there's the general policy that's wrong on the philosophical and moral level about taking human life in this way. There's practical concerns with the legislation that D.C. passed. We have the veto authority to disapprove of this, use a disapproval resolution, disapprove of what the District of Columbia's council did. We passed that out of committee last night, but unfortunately not going to bring it to the floor. And it's just wrong. I mean, we're the pro-life party. We're the pro-life conference here. Let's bring it to the floor and let's have a vote. And let's do it. Let's do the pro-life thing and the thing that respects the sanctity of life. So we're hopeful that the leadership will have a change of heart and actually bring this to the floor so we can have a vote on it and show the American people we disagree with what they're doing. Now, whether the Senate will pass it or take it up, that's a different question. Our job is to do our job, and we're going to be denied that right.
A couple of issues here, Congressman Jordan. Number one, you pointed out that the substance of the matter, death with dignity, physician-assisted suicide. I mean, health care is supposed to protect and preserve life, not take it.
Yep.
So that at its core is problematic. But we had Congressman Winthrop on talking about this a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And there, the way this law is written,
it
could lead to some unintended consequences that could be horrible.
You know, of course, the witness can be anybody. It doesn't have to be a relative of the individual who's seeking this terrible thing. The oversight and of the doctors, you know, the reporting thing is not in any way, I think, the kind of safeguards you want in place for something this bad. So there's just the general concern I have, that I know you have and your listeners have, but there's also specifics of this legislation. And then there's just the fundamental issue that this is, you know, doctors take the oath, do no harm, the Hippocratic Oath. What, and now in our nation's capital, the Congress of the United States is going to sit by and not take this up for a vote and not try to disapprove this thing, and they're going to just let it happen in our nation's capital because they think, well, I don't think we can win in the Senate, or whatever the reason may be. The point is, just because you think you may not win the game, you still kick the ball off and play the game. So let's do what we're supposed to do. Let's disapprove of it in the House, and let's see what the Senate does over there on their side.
Well, Congressman Jordan, doesn't this set a dangerous precedent if the Congress does not act on such a fundamental departure from where Congress has stood on an issue like this?
Sure does. Sure does. I mean, and frankly, there's another way we can get it to the floor. When you vote something out of the committee, the chairman has to file a report with the clerk. And once the report is filed on a motion, on a resolution like this, there is a privilege motion that any member can bring up. And that privilege motion is a motion to proceed. So if the chairman would just file the report, Dr. Winthrop could make the motion to proceed. Jim Jordan could make the motion to proceed. Anyone in the House could make that motion to proceed. But right now, all 435 members are going to be denied their right to make that motion on something this important in our nation's capital because the chairman won't file the report and our leadership won't bring it up. And that's the part that bothers me. Let's just bring it up and have the vote. And if we win, great. If we lose, that'd be unfortunate, but let's at least try to do the right thing.
So, Congressman Jordan, what action item would you have for our listeners today?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know that there's a specific thing other than just, you know, make them aware of what's going on here. I'm just encouraging our leadership. We've got a meeting here in about an hour with some of our leadership. I'm going to encourage them then to bring this up. Let's do what we need to do. Some members are saying, let's wait until the appropriations process, but you can't fully stop it with saying any money that goes to the District of Columbia can't be used to further this law. That's a roundabout way to stop it. Let's do the direct way and say we disapprove of this and it will not happen. That's what we should do. Frankly, we should do both.
Right.
If we truly want to protect the sanctity of life. And there's always, as you know, Tony, we have so many big issues coming that typically in the last several years we've not dealt with the appropriations, each spending bill in a singular fashion. There's some big spending bill kind of thrown together, and that makes it even more difficult to use that approach to stop this law that's passed in the District of Columbia.
Well, and also, generally speaking, when you have appropriations is not the ideal way to legislate, and you're limited mm-hmm. in what you can do with it. And I understand that's been a fallback because, in recent years, you haven't had a chance to actually pass legislation. Of course, we haven't done appropriations bills either. But as you said, you can do both. I think you take a stand on the principal issue, you get it through the House, you get a vote in the House, you make a very strong statement in the House. So it doesn't go through the Senate. You have made a statement. Then you can go back to the appropriations and put it on as a rider there.
Yep. That's exactly what I think. And you know, we appreciate the work of your organization supporting this. There's been other good pro-family groups who are supporting it as well. Let's get it done. And I appreciate Dr. Winstrup. You know, here's a guy who has served our country as a physician in combat areas and done surgery and treatment for our men and women who are over there fighting for us. And so he understands the importance of protecting the sanctity of life and how important that Hippocratic Oath and that he took as a doctor and how important that is. So we appreciate his efforts as well.
Well, Congressman Jim Jordan, as always, great to have you on the program, and we'll encourage folks to at least weigh in with their members of Congress to take a stand on this issue.
Thank you. Take care, brother.
All right. Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, 4th Congressional District. Great guy. Founding chairman of the Freedom Caucus. Good friend of mine. All right. Let me give you the Capitol switchboard number, 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. You know, again, what good does it have? What good is it to have the majority if you don't use it for certain things? And look, I understand all the arguments, you know, for physician-assisted suicide. I understand all the issues here. But look, as a society, we have said that life is sacred. I know some states have it. Most states do not. But we're talking about our nation's capital, and Congress has the oversight. So essentially, Congress, whatever happens in D.C., Congress gives its approval, either directly or indirectly. And that has implications nationwide. Call your member of Congress. Tell them to weigh in before it's too late. 202-224-3121. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be talking about General Flynn's departure. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, we've been leading these tours to Washington, D.C. for almost 20 years, and we've never had a response like we've had this year. We're going to fill up early for both our June and our September Spiritual Heritage Tours. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian, and he'll be commenting all along the way, taking your questions and interacting with the group. We're going to be going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown as well on a separate tour that just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon Spiritual Heritage Tour. So, if you'd like to go on one or both of these trips, you can find out all the information, all the details at the website spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com. 2017 may be your year to join us on one of these spiritual heritage tours.
In the darkest parts of Mumbai, India's red light districts, all it takes is a little bit of money, and a young girl, maybe as young as 8, is trafficked, her innocence stolen.
They made me sit in one place, and they sent a man near me, and then things started happening in the wrong ways, and I had no way out.
And it was every single day.
Morning, they used to come. Afternoon, they used to come. Evening is the same thing that we used to do. And even if we would express that we were tired or it is hurting us, they would not listen because they have paid a huge amount for us and they would get what they wanted.
But you can make sure it never happens again when you team up with AFR and India Partners. Right here on AFR, we'll show you how your gift of $7.08 provides a day of safety, rescue, and care at a safe house operated by India Partners. So how many children can you rescue? Learn more and give now at AFR.net.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian health care sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable health care for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your health care. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical health care. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central Time, we'll be having a special webcast which will feature a number of key leaders, including the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest. Privacy and freedom, good for business. We'll be talking about these radical bathroom bills that have been popping up across the country and what state leaders are doing to stop them. That's tomorrow at 12 Central Time. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. President Trump's National Security Advisor Michael Flynn resigned late last night after questions about his conversations with Russian officials before the president took office. What does this mean? What's happening here? What's the bigger story? Joining us now is Claire Lopez. She's with the Center for Security Policy. She's the Vice President for Research and Analysis. Claire, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I'm very glad to be with you.
All right. You know, the president apparently known about these conversations that his former national security advisor had with Russian officials before taking office. What is this all about? What's happening?
Well, I think the question that's not being asked quite enough is how did these conversations, the text or the content of the conversations, become public? Within the U.S. intelligence community, it is obvious that there are those who are leaking information in a coordinated, concerted way in order to take down, attack and take down the Trump administration and its key members in it. There is no way that the media can report, as I have seen today, that there were 9 separate sources out of the intelligence community giving them information, giving the media information about what General Flynn might have said in conversations with the Russian ambassador without somebody having broken the law. That's the question we need to ask, and hopefully the House Intelligence Committee, the HPSI, will be getting into that investigation.
Well, Claire, that's interesting because as I was reading through the various stories, we know that the Department of Justice went to the White House. they briefed the administration on what General Flynn, you know, he had, the conversations he had. And I was wondering, how did they know about the conversations he had? And it's like they were immediately coming in behind him. Are we seeing almost, you know, an intelligence community operating on its own? Or what's going on?
Well, what it looks like is a rear guard action organized, really directed by holdovers from the last administration, from the Obama administration, politicized members of the intelligence community who have decided to take it upon themselves to oppose, and as the slogan is now saying, resistance, resist the Trump administration. But clearly, when classified intelligence information like is collected only, as far as I know, by NSA, National Security Agency, about the conversations, and this is routine, this is normal, of the senior diplomats and representatives of foreign governments like the Russians who are posted in the United States. NSA monitors those conversations. But how that information got public, not just to the Justice Department, which is internal to the government, but how did it get to the reporters in an absolute drumbeat of leaks and releases? That's the part that needs to be investigated, because that's illegal.
Now, Claire, the issue was that apparently the conversation topic was over whether or not there would be the lifting of sanctions against Russia. This was a conversation that Flynn apparently had with the Russian ambassador before Trump was inaugurated. Those conversations, as far as I'm aware, there's nothing illegal about him having those conversations, are there?
No. I mean, he was already nominated for the position of National Security Council director, and he was already on the government payroll. And it would have been a natural topic. Now, people cite the Logan Act from the year 1799, which has never, ever been enforced, and which says essentially that private citizens may not engage in government policy conversations or engaging in foreign policy with representatives of foreign governments is essentially what the law says. Never been enforced by anybody against anybody. And that's not really what General Flynn was doing either. As far as we know, and again, all we know is what leaked into the media by, again, and this is the point I really want to emphasize, it's illegal that somebody in the intelligence community leaked the content of those conversations to the media. Now, I mean, if they shared it within the government, with the Trump administration, even with the Justice Department, that's one thing.
Right.
But it went to the media. And that speaks to a concerted campaign, I think, many of us think, aimed at taking down the Trump administration and, you know, going after his top people one by one.
Claire Lopez, let me ask one final question. We're almost out of time, but is it targeted at the Trump administration, or was there an intentional effort at General Flynn, because he's been such a hardliner against Islamic terrorism?
Well, I think it could be both. You know, by taking out General Flynn, who's been, you know, such a patriot, such service to his country over a period of decades, but he's been very hardline. And publicly, for instance, about the Iran deal, the Iranian nuclear weapons program, for instance, about making public documents related, side secret documents related to that deal concluded in July 2015, about making public the documents seized from the raid at Abbottabad in Pakistan when Osama bin Laden was killed. And those documents showed very clearly, even from the little tiny bit that's been made public,
Right.
The relationship between Iran and al-Qaeda. And General Flynn had pledged to make more of those documents public. So all of those could have been reasons why, you know, those holdovers from the previous administration might have wanted to take aim at him personally. But in effect, then that damages the Trump administration overall at the same time.
Claire Lopez, thanks so much for being with us. As always, great to hear
from you.
Thank you,
Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, General Jerry Boykin joins us to talk about the fact that North Korea and Iran may be testing America. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, in all likelihood, I think we're going to see stocks take a breather after we've seen record highs on all the indices here in the U.S. It looks like this Trump's going to change the tax code soon rally gives some relief to corporate America as well as individuals. I mean, that's basically what the rally is about, and there's a lot of confidence that is coming out in and around that. Looks like it's got to take a breather. It's up considerably, needless to say. Everybody is waiting for Janet Yellen. Janet Yellen speaks twice on Capitol Hill. First day, she is speaking to the Senate Banking Committee, and then the next day, she is speaking to the Housing Financial Services panel. Obviously, everybody is looking for some hints as to U.S. interest rate hikes, primarily in the month of March, next month. I'm not sure, but everybody believes that this is going to impact the markets in a negative way. I can't imagine, since December's rate increase had zero impact on the so-called Trump rally, I don't think that what she does with 0.25% is going to have any impact on the markets. I believe it's either already factored in or it's irrelevant to the markets. I think the markets care very little about what's going to happen to interest rates, assuming that it is a modest increase. But it would appear as though some are concerned about that. Producer price index, the headline number, 0.6% increase, but the core number, X food and energy, up 0.2%. The core number, ex food and energy, up 1.6% for the last 12 months. Of course, that could reflect some inflation depending upon consumer price index coming out later in the week.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me give you a reminder once again. Tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 o'clock Central Time, we'll have a special webcast. Privacy and security, good for business. We'll have Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of Texas and Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest of North Carolina talking about these policies protecting women and children in public facilities and how this push from the Obama administration is kind of still going out across the country and what can be done both here nationally and at the state level. Again, that's tomorrow. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Over the weekend, the guy with bad hair in North Korea launched another missile, this time on land. They've been doing this on by submarine, and this is showing new technology. U.S. officials acknowledge the fact that this shows new capabilities on behalf of North Korea. Also, Iran twice now since President Trump has taken office have fired missiles in violation of the so-called agreement, whatever you want to call it. And then on Friday, Russian jets buzzed in the Black Sea, U.S. naval craft, in a provocative manner. I mean, provoking us to action. Are we seeing these countries testing the resolve of the United States? I mean, this was happening on a routine basis, remember, during the Obama years. Is it still happening, and is this an effort to test Donald Trump? Joining me now with the answer is our favorite general, retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council, founding member of Delta, retired from the Army after 36 and a half years. General, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. What are we seeing happening here? North Korea, Iran, Russia. Is this provocation?
Well, certainly it's provocation, but I think we need to look at each of them as separate entities and separate events. In the case of North Korea, they fired this Pukukong missile that is a medium range.
Can you say that again?
Well, no. It's, okay. It does not roll off my tongue.
All right.
But it is a medium range intercontinental ballistic missile, and this is something that they are striving to develop because in their mind it puts them within range of South Korea, Japan, and even the west coast of the United States. What do we have to do about that? We've got to get China involved in that. And what Trump has to do is get China to start putting pressure on Kim Jong-un to knock this stuff off. And China could make a huge difference if China was willing to cooperate with us. So I think it actually could work in our favor that here's an issue we agree on, that we don't want a nuclear-armed North Korea.
Now, a lot of the technology that North Korea uses has come from China, right?
Well, a lot of the technology has come from China, but it's also come from other places. It's come from Iran. It's come from Russia. And it's kind of been a two-way street with regards to the Iranians because the Iranians have actually tested their nuclear warheads and their missile systems in North Korea. So they've gotten it from a number of different places. But I think that China is key to, short of war, I think China is key to being able to put enough pressure on the North Koreans to have them slow down on this development of not only nuclear warheads, but missiles.
Can this be tolerated? I mean, can you continue to see North Korea acting in such an aggressive manner?
No, well, yeah, I can see that. Kim Jong-un is certifiably crazy. He's killed his own family and anytime he felt threatened. So, yeah, it will continue. Until somebody does something very definitive and very positive to stop it, or unless he dies, this is going to continue. China is the key, though. And this is where I think that Trump needs to go into his efforts with the Chinese of making Korea, North Korea, a top priority in terms of where we want to find cooperation. Now, with regards to Iran, look, Iran has consistently violated the so-called agreement, and they're going to continue to do so because there's no incentive for them not to. They got everything. We got nothing. They didn't have to give up anything really of substance. And this is where, again, I think that Donald Trump is going to have to make a hard decision as to whether he's going to stand by this agreement or whether he's going to nullify it and say the deal is off, we're going to reimpose sanctions.
But the effect of the sanctions was cumulative. It was over years where the sanctions, now that they've gotten all the cash back and the sanctions were lifted, even reimposing those sanctions would take a long time for those to have an impact.
Well, again, the question is going to be, do you at least start this process?
Right.
Or do you just let them do what they're doing? And they are testing very modern missiles that, in fact, put much of Europe within range of their missile systems, which are all capable of carrying a nuclear warhead.
All right, General, we're up against a break. Can you hold on there?
Yep.
I'd like to finish that because I want to talk about Russia. I mean, a lot going on surrounding Russia. I mean, a lot out of this last election, the conversations General Flynn had with the Russian ambassador led to his stepping down. But now we see this action on behalf of Russia that would suggest that they may be testing whether or not America will respond. Folks, we're going to continue this conversation with General Boykin, and then we're going to take your phone calls a little bit later here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're back with a lot more here on Washington Watch.
Marriages everywhere are in crisis. The divorce rate is sky high. What can turn things around? The key lies in what God has bestowed on mankind, incarnational attachment. Attachment is God's design for human relationships. It is the bonding process that God ordained for us from infancy and throughout our lives. Children who receive the tender gaze, physical affection, and consistent emotional presence of a parent will develop a settled confidence that bolsters them in life. Even during hard times, they are reassured in knowing, I am not alone. In adult life, they bring the security to their marriages in ways that minister strength, comfort, and healing to their spouses. In a profound lecture by Dr. Jesse Gill, discover more about embracing God's design for attachment for marriage and our Christian faith in ways that bring transformation and growth. Visit frc.org/events to view this lecture and many more.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
American Family Association began in 1977 as the National Federation for Decency. Founded by Don Wildman, our mission is to inform, equip, and activate people like you to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and give aid to the church. American Family Association is one of the largest and most effective pro-family organizations in the country, and it's because of God's blessings and the generosity of people like you.
We are not allowed to have a U-Haul that comes to heaven with us.
Anna Marie Travers has an AFA Foundation charitable gift annuity.
The Lord has given us things that we can acquire, but you know, everything will stay here, and I'm so thankful for the American Family Annuity Fund, where we can give some to something that we so highly value.
Through the AFA Foundation, a charitable gift annuity provides a monthly income as well as a legacy of support for the American Family Association.
I cannot recommend a better person than they have at AFA to help you with getting your annuity fund. It was so easy.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch, and we're glad you are. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Hey, but folks, let me remind you that this program comes to you because of people like you. All across America, supporters of the Family Research Council, and you too can be a supporter, partner with us to make sure that Family Research Council is right here in our nation's capital, advocating for faith, family, and freedom, and bringing you programs like this where you will hear the news, information from inside like you hear no place else. All right, we have members of Congress, other leaders on each and every day with the truth, with information from the front lines, actually, even behind the front lines at times. All right, the website, again, TonyPerkins.com. All right, General, thanks so much for sticking around here. We talked about North Korea, you know, the launch they did over the weekend, Iran, two launches since the president has taken office in violation of the agreement. Let's talk now about Russia. Russia actually has deployed land-based cruise missiles within their country in violation of a 1987 agreement, treaty between the U.S. and Russia. They also, as I mentioned on Friday in the Black Sea, multiple aircraft buzzing over U.S. Navy naval ships. What's going on there?
Well, I don't think there's any question that Putin is trying to let everybody know that he's not afraid of the United States. And, you know, I think the whole world is looking at Donald Trump and seeing a strong man here. And I think Putin is pushing back, trying to demonstrate that, well, he doesn't frighten me. In reality, this thing with the missiles, this is not the first time they've done this. That goes back to, as you said, the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty that goes back to 1987, the SALT Treaty from 1987. And it wasn't very long after that treaty was signed that the Russians under Mikhail Gorbachev actually came back in and said, well, you know, maybe this, we were a little hasty in agreeing to this because, you know, we've got neighbors around us that are not part of NATO, but like China, that still have nuclear, short-range nuclear weapons, and we need to renegotiate this. And George H.W. Bush was not willing to let them off the hook on it. And as a result of that, they've had a clandestine program to develop and mature these short-range and medium-range intercontinental ballistic missiles, which is what they what they've just been moving around. We would call them a cruise missile, but they're moving those around in a couple of different places there. So what's Donald Trump going to do? This is a tough challenge for him, and he's hampered by the fact that he has lost his national security advisor. So now his national security team has got to figure out what is an appropriate response to this kind of overt violation of a longstanding strategic arms limitation treaty.
All right, let's add into what's been happening. We've seen this multiple times in the last few years where we've seen aggressive behavior on behalf of other nations, Iran frequently doing it, but Russia as well, mm-hmm. In the Black Sea. I mean, what is the appropriate response here?
Well, again, to each incident differently. I think in the case of Iran, we ought to go back in there and slam those sanctions back on them. We ought to have closed-door diplomacy with our allies because they're going to be reluctant to reestablish sanctions. But I think we got to go back and re-sanction them. We never should have lifted those sanctions to begin with. And then on top of that, we shouldn't have given them $150 billion. You know. But that said, I think we need to reimpose the sanctions. With regards to the Russians, I think that the sooner our diplomats sit down behind closed doors and we put a marker down. You see, that's something that even if Barack Obama did it, it had no credibility. But I think it will have credibility. So where do we draw the line?
Well,
where
I mean,
do
should
we draw
we,
the line with Russia?
Should we tell our in our diplomatic relations, let's say let's take Russia, for instance, do we tell them that we're adopting in our military new rules of engagement? If mm-hmm. you come within a mm-hmm. certain perimeter of our vessels in international water, we're going to consider that aggressive behavior and we're going to take action.
Well, we have to obey international and maritime law. So, no, that's not the full solution. But there are other things. Let's just say, for example, if we wanted to send Russia a message, which I think we should do, we immediately start to provide lethal aid to the Ukrainians. All we've ever given them is food and blankets and some medical supplies. We've never given them lethal aid. If we gave them lethal aid, allowing them to fight back against the Russians in the eastern Ukraine, and their body bags going home to Moscow with no real explanation as to what the heck they're fighting for and why they're losing their sons, that's going to make the same kind of difference that it did in Afghanistan when the Russians pulled out after a decade, because they could no longer explain to the Russian people why their sons were being killed. So put lethal aid into the Ukraine. That's a strong message to Russia. Deploy more troops up into the Baltic states. You know, the Baltic states are assessed to be the next big target of Russia. If they're successful in the Ukraine, then they go to the Baltics next. So put more NATO troops there, to include American troops there, as a statement to Putin that we will defend this.
Now, we talk about Ukraine. If we were to provide greater resources into that area, will they prove to be a more reliable ally than we saw in the, you know, surrogate war in Afghanistan?
Oh, the Ukrainians are our friends. The Ukrainians want to be part of NATO. The only reason that NATO has rejected them was because of the Russian concerns. Russia has objected to Ukraine being a part of NATO. But I think that that's the next step as well. I think that Donald Trump should be working with the North Atlantic Council, which is the political arm of NATO, and he should be talking to them about making the Ukraine a part of NATO. Now, that what that does, it puts him in a position where they can trigger the article in the NATO Constitution, which says an attack on one is an attack on the other.
Right.
I think it's Article 6 of the Constitution. They can also trigger an Article 4, which I believe it's Article 4, which says if you feel threatened as a NATO nation, you can call for support, and NATO is bound to deploy troops into your area to protect you as a preemptive kind of thing. So I think that we ought to be working to get Ukraine into NATO. But here again, the politics of Europe and the fear of the Russians there has become a major impediment to being able to do that. I think with Trump's leadership and the growing nationalism within Europe, you're going to see some changes politically in Europe in a positive way. And I think that the attitudes will swing more towards building a stronger NATO and having a real defense capability that can meet the needs of the NATO countries and the continent of Europe. And right now, it's questionable as just how effective they're going to be. But Trump has also shot across a shot across the bow of NATO because he's called them out on their not spending the required 2% of their GDP on national defense. So I think that a stronger NATO is also a message to the Russians. And I think this is where Trump's got to start to build the strength and the coalition within NATO as a message to Russia. I don't think Russia has to be the enemy that it is today. I just think that they have exploited our weaknesses under the Obama administration. And I think under Trump, we have an opportunity to reduce the threat from Russia. But we've got to show strength up front first.
How long do we have to show that strength? Because, I mean, obviously this testing is coming right now.
Yeah.
It cannot go unanswered for long.
Well, no, that's right. And none of us want to see a hot war with Russia right now. Nobody wants that. Nobody advocates that. But probably peace through strength applies now just like it did when Ronald Reagan was
so, talking. So part of that would be immediately turn to rebuilding our nation's military, which has been decimated by the policies of Obama, both from a material standpoint as well as a morale standpoint.
That's exactly right. And look, the Russians track us very carefully in terms of what our real capabilities are. They watch our exercises. They track our budgets. They know what we're buying.
By the way, there was a spy ship was spotted off of the East Coast just this past weekend on the East Coast.
Off of Kings Bay, Georgia, there where our nuclear submarines
are based. They are
watching. Of course they are. They're watching us. But they know our capabilities. So, yes, you're right. Rebuilding our military capabilities and having a credible military that is capable of defending this nation, I think, is an absolute imperative to being able to show the kind of strength that will get Vladimir Putin's attention and then make it possible for us to go behind closed doors with him and his advisors and map out a way ahead that reduces the threat of a war between Russia and the West in general.
How long of a process, General Boykin, is that?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen overnight, but I think it's an incremental thing. And you show good faith in the first step, and you're more inclined to go to the second step, and you show good faith in that. But it's not like what we did with Iran, where we go in and say, now, exactly what do you want for us to be able to say we've got a treaty with you? You know, and that was the most foolish, I think, probably treaty in the history of America. And of course, the administration didn't call it a treaty. They called it a diplomatic agreement. But a treaty by any other name is still a treaty. And that was just stupid. So what we've done is we've set Iran on the pathway to a nuclear weapon, a nuclear capability. We don't want to make that mistake with Russia. We want to have, I think Donald Trump's got to have serious diplomatic discussions with Russia. I think he's got to sit down and say, you know, we've got some limits here now. There are certain limits that we're going to set, and you don't push us on these things. Because if you do, you're going to force us to take action. Now, I don't think that discussion ever took place with Barack Obama. I think that what Hillary Clinton went over there with the big red reset button, and Putin laughed all the way home, you know, after that kind of nonsense, you know, that big public display of what I would call buffoonery. And he looked at it just the same way. And then he said, you know, these clowns, I can do anything I want to. So what did he do? He took Crimea. We didn't do anything. He went into eastern Ukraine. We didn't do anything. He went in and set up bases down in Syria. We didn't do anything. So what's to stop him? Well, I think Trump's got to make it very clear that there are limits. And the first time it's violated, we're going to show him that there are limits. See, we need to develop some kind of agreement with him that we're going to cooperate on certain issues. Let's find an issue that we can cooperate on.
we could cooperate on going after ISIS. Mm-hmm. We could agree right. to go and after talked ISIS. About that. Right. But when they step outside of that, when they violate that, we also have to have a plan for how we're going to respond, how we're going to react, what we're going to do, how severe our reaction is going to be. So, again, it kind of comes back to the Ronald Reagan peace through strength. Trust but verify.
From that standpoint, General Boykin, when you look back, because you were in the military at that time when under Jimmy Carter, and then when Ronald Reagan came in, how would you compare the military in right when Ronald Reagan came in to where it is today?
Mm-hmm. What brought Jimmy Carter down was an activity that I was part of. And that was in April of 1980 when we went into Iran to try and rescue 52 Americans that were being held at the United States Embassy there. We failed. 8 good men died about 100 miles from Tehran in the desert with a military that was not up to the task, a military that was not capable of doing what our nation needed us to do. That brought Jimmy Carter down. The good news was, in spite of that, it brought Ronald Reagan into power. Reagan inherited a military that was in a shambles, as reflected in that operation in Iran that night.
Is it comparable to what we see today?
Well, what we see today is more comparable to about 1971, the post-Vietnam mm-hmm. military, which was just the morale was just horrible. Now, and there were racial problems, and there were sexual assaults, and there were all kinds of things wrong. So that was a miserable military that had a bunch of conscripts that were in their last 4 months in the Army, and they were getting out, and that was a miserable military. That's the military I came into, and it was tough. It was really tough. You had fraggings of, company headquarters and that type of thing, So that's bad. But Reagan inherited a military that, because of neglect, it had languished. Its materiel, its equipment had just gotten old. And
well, we almost have both.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Now, what we have inherited with what Donald Trump has inherited is a military that has spent all its time and much of its resources on social experiments. So when you look at the devastating effect that that's had, by taking away from our primary focus of winning wars, by using our training time for these social experiments, you got to turn around and revamp the training and the readiness of our military.
A lot to be done, without question. General, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
By the way, you know what today is, right?
Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's.
Not to me. Not to me. Ashley, your wife.
Oh, my wife. Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, folks. So glad you're with us today, and we look forward to seeing you again tomorrow. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.